Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.
And only on January 31st, 2019, can you believe a whole month has gone by?
And they decided to take it out with rain. We may float
and
away
thunder,
today. And thunder. And lightning. Were your pups okay?
Yes,
were the doggies
yes,
okay?
Well, Riley, you know, yeah. Very sensitive, needy. Yeah.
Much like myself.
Trembling. Yeah. Trembling. Cooper, laid back. Slept right through it.
Yeah. That's my boy.
But, yeah.
That's so, a good thing.
And,
cool thing.
And you don't have an animal, do you?
I have no animals currently. I have two children that are wild animals, but
right?
That's about it. Yes, no animals in our house. But I'll tell you, that thunder, that was enough to shake anybody's confidence, man. I tell you, that was a lot this morning. We don't get that very much in California.
No, it was crazy. We have a chihuahua that was shaking.
Yeah.
Yep. Vibrating.
Yeah. First of all, chihuahuas always shake. They can't
no,
help
ours
it.
Does
but
not.
This one, man,
yeah.
Really.
Very
only thunder. Only,
very
only
butch
thunder.
Chihuahua.
If I start cursing, then he can.
Yeah,
then
oh,
he
really? Like yeah, cursing. Yeah.
I think the butch
really?
Chihuahua may be the name of our next show. So just so you know, that's very cool. Very cool. Well, you've heard their voices, ladies and gentlemen. As you said, Michael, here it is January 31st, and we have another exciting show for our listeners today. Michael, today we have a talented pair of actors who happen to be married in real life, which is a pretty cool thing, and we will be talking with them a little bit more about their roles as John and Abigail Adams here in
I've been collecting
amazing,
stories that are told
Ronald
in
Reagan.
The Soviet Union.
What do you think?
By their people that, among themselves.
You like that one? Or we can go with Hail to the Chief. Do we like Hail to the Chief better?
Hail to the Chief, much better, I think.
See, but now, yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I could also pull out Roosevelt, and I've got Kennedy.
Kennedy's not bad. I like Hail to the Chief. Hail to the Chief, yeah.
I love that. Isn't that pretty? So there's this whole compilation of people who've played the John Adams role, and it's amazing how stately those actors are, too. And even when you look at the movies, but this is a major role. Did you kind of fall in love with the man as well as with the part?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you do any research about Adams, he's just a fascinating individual. And, I mean, you can't help to just really admire the man.
Yeah.
Yeah,
all those early statesmen, I don't think we realize how hard that was to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was, I mean, to come out of nothing and to shape a country and to lay down things, the truths that are self-evident. What a difficult thing to do. And I was looking back at some of these, certainly from the great speakers we've had, from Kennedy to Reagan, to these people who just kind of took what they did and tried to encapsulate it for a modern audience. We'll never truly be able to understand what a time that was and how difficult that was to sit in a room and decide what a country should be like.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
I love it. I love it.
Right, and what was on the line for them as well?
Yeah.
You know, they were facing hanging. They were facing treason charges from the crown.
Yeah. No doubt. And we're excited to talk about 1776, no doubt. Very cool.
I mean, by the analogy of what's happening today in Washington and in politics, it's so contradictory.
No doubt. No doubt.
Yeah, it's a terrible time right now. But, that's right, Andrew, following a run for McCoy Rigby Entertainment at La Mirada Theater for the Performing Arts. The show is opening at the Soraya at Northridge's what is that? Valley Performing Arts Center.
A great venue.
It's really the Eunice Soraya at Valley Performing Arts Center in the Grand Hall. 1776 will be on stage at that venue, February 8th through the 10th, and we are so looking forward to hearing all about it. So, ladies and gentlemen, please give a warm welcome to Terry Bibb and her husband, Andy Umber.
That's right. They cheered more for you than they did for Reagan or Kennedy. That's pretty impressive. Yeah. You guys are doing just fine.
You got friends in the audience.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. Well, obviously, Michael, we will talk more with these two fun and exciting guests here in just a moment.
Yeah.
But before we do that, we should thank our sponsors.
I think so. We would like to thank Princess Cruises for coming on board. Princess Cruises for coming on board. Anybody?
Aha. Uh-huh. A pun.
No. That went terribly wrong.
A wave of silence that fell over the studio.
Really, yes.
That joke sank.
Yeah. So, as presenting sponsors for State of the Arts during 2019, a pioneer in excellence on the high seas for meaningful travelers who seek enriching experiences, only Princess Cruises offers cruise vacations to help you come back new, providing fresh perspectives by connecting you with nature, cultures, and loved ones in a new way.
One of the best-known names in cruising, Princess Cruises first set sail in 1965 with a single ship cruising to Mexico. Today, the line has grown to become the third largest cruise line in the world, renowned for innovative ships, an array of onboard options including extravagant entertainment, and an environment of exceptional customer service. A recognized leader in worldwide cruising, Princess carries approximately 1.7 million guests each year to more than 360 destinations worldwide aboard a fleet of 17 modern vessels.
Experience the next wave in vacation travel at the end of each month from September to August. One lucky winner will win a cruise for two in a balcony stateroom on board one of the new Ocean Medallion class ships. So make sure to enter every month for your chance to win. And you can do that by coming to latalkradio.com, as you've done today, and then to the State of the Arts page on the site, and you will see the Princess logo. Click on that. It will take you into the registration process, and this is a $5,000 gift.
Wow.
To some destination on the West Coast here. Probably Alaska, I would assume, or perhaps the other direction. It's the best, and to have a stateroom and a balcony.
Perfect for a president. We could send him
right.
one. We're in good shape.
That's
We're
right.
in good shape.
So come as often as you like and register, and good luck to you.
That's right. Obviously a great, great prize. We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts here in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to State of the Arts. And as always, Michael, we encourage you to check out one of the best photographers here in Los Angeles, Carrie Ann Francis, at cafrancisphoto.com. She's as good as they get, and she will get you work just with pictures. Right? Every actor's dream. I mean, it's been shocking when you hear the feedback from managers who, you know, have been asking their clients to get new headshots for ages, and they, I don't want to spend the money. One session with Carrie and people come out and they're getting a response from their photos.
Yeah.
So we're grateful she came and shot us too. Almost
she
made
did.
Me look good. Which is that's a big thing to do. So she got it. She nailed it.
So Andrew, let's just recap our we haven't seen each other for a week, but
that's not true.
We saw each other last night.
That's right. We went out and partied.
We did.
What did we do?
We went to the press opening of Hello Dolly with one Betty Buckley.
A great, great show and a great experience. They did the red carpet last night, as one should for Miss Buckley, and obviously that was fun. But I hadn't seen that show for probably 10 years, and I was surprised at how well that show holds up. It's really fun. It's such a glimpse of Hollywood and of kind of the golden age of Broadway.
It certainly
I love
is.
That. Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I was doing, I was working for Broadway World TV last night, so I was on the red carpet doing celebrity interviews, and I was astounded by how many of those celebrities had never seen Hello, Dolly.
Wow, really?
Especially the younger ones.
Sure.
There was like some Disney stars, you know, that group of celebrity type things. But quite honestly, Patrick Ward Kelly, Mrs. Jean Kelly, said to me, she said, you know, I've always concentrated on the movie because Jean directed it. So,
right.
I've never seen the show. I said, you a dancer?
Amazing, right.
In your career? I mean,
a little surprising she'd never been in it.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
Wow. So I thought, well, I'm going to hear your thoughts, but I was very skeptical, I guess, going in because it was Betty Buckley, and she's a very unique woman with a very unique talent. And with that, how would that transfer? What would be her spin on this role? And so I was excited to see it. I'll let you share your opinion about it.
Well, first of all, I thought the casting was amazing. Every time you go to see something at the Pantages, you know that it's going to be quality. But also, you have to find that special bit of magic, especially for a show like this that has so many obligations. And the sets were gorgeous, and I thought the performances, top to bottom, were really so cohesive. They worked so well together, and they were all obviously surrounding Miss Buckley, who was amazing. And I thought she transformed into that role.
She was.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think she was a little down. I think she had a little bit of a cold starting in that scene, especially when she actually took a tissue. And did you see that?
I did, but did you think it was? You didn't think it was part of the show?
No.
That's interesting.
No, also because of... There were vocally, and I don't say this out of disrespect for her, but she was a little pitchy sometimes, and or she would take a note somewhere else where we're hearing that what?
I do that.
You know where
frequently.
That note belongs?
Yeah.
That's why I think when she actually, put the hanky up to her nose and the noise came out of, her microphone, that was the problem. She was fighting that.
Well, I thought her comic timing was so great. God, I mean, wasn't she funny? I
especially mean, in that one scene at the table at the Harmonia Gardens.
Yeah, so funny. Boy. So funny.
She melted.
That's right. That's right. We had a fun group there last night. It was we got to hang out a little bit and chat, and that's always good. It's good to get out in Los Angeles and go see live theater. We're big fans on this show of saying, hey, get up off the couch, put the phones down, go watch live theater, lean forward and engage with some of these amazing performers. And I thought that Hello, Dolly! Was an interesting way to do that because you left feeling good. It doesn't necessarily give you a whole lot of things to think about. You don't walk away going, so Plato and Aristotle obviously influenced the script. You walk away going, that was just fun.
Yeah.
It was so much fun. Yeah. And you feel so good at the end of it. And you remember, that's why people went to the theater in the 20s. You know, it's like, hey, we can go think about the Depression, or we can flee and go look and watch a show that's happy and leaves you feeling really good. And I can use a little more of that in my life every now and then, you know. So this was a great thing. This was a cool thing to go see. Fun people, and the house was packed.
Totally packed.
Packed.
Yep. And, you know, opening night, I mean, you know, always on an opening night, you get a bigger reaction, a lot of industry people there. But it was, for a touring version of this show, it was spectacular.
The sets
were spectacular.
Amazing,
the painting of the murals and the background that supported the actual, you know, sets and so forth were just everything you could imagine. And the costumes.
Yep.
And the color and the orchestrations. It was, it was a beautiful evening at the theater.
Did you go eat before the show?
I did not.
See, I went over to Wooden Vine, and I sat there at Wooden Vine. Yeah, that's right. I had a good time, and they did. I mean, they do such great food, but they were packed, too.
Yeah.
And whenever that place is packed, like you need a reservation packed, you know that everybody's going from there to the theater because it's right across the street. So obviously a good thing to see the state of theater strong here in Los Angeles.
Yeah, and I was there much earlier. You know, I was there by 5:45. So, it was a long night for me, and then I stopped at Carl's Jr. on the way home.
Chef Carl.
And got very fresh chicken nuggets, actually.
Wow.
Actually didn't taste like the usual, you know, overdone stuff. So maybe I got lucky. But
I had the red flannel salad.
You did?
Which I see you came prepared for today, Andy.
Yeah.
Well done.
Andy
well done.
And me.
I did. And yes, exactly. You too.
Guys.
Right. Well, that's right. Yeah, you guys are ready to go chop wood, man.
Yeah.
What's going on here? It's like, get out there. We're going to go build a cabin. Lots of fun. We highly recommend that show to get out there to Pantages. They do a great job on everything, but this one was a special treat. So.
Well, we are so privileged, ladies and gentlemen, to have our two amazing guests here today on the State of the Arts on a day like today in Los Angeles, which is, as we said, raining and thunder and lightning and all sorts of Mother Nature things taking control of herself.
But you can't hold theater people back, man.
No,
they braved it. They made it out.
That.
That's right.
So our first guest is perhaps best known for her 1,000-plus performances as Christine Day in The Phantom of the Opera on Broadway and with the National Tour, singing a command performance at the White House and earning a Helen Hayes Award nomination and a Carbonell Award along the way. She was also seen on Broadway in the first revival of She Loves Me in the role of Amalia.
Other notable credits include playing the title role in Fanny at the Paper Mill Playhouse and starring in world premieres of two new musicals, Songs from the Tall Grass and Children of the Night. She has been featured solos with the gala tribute honoring Lord Andrew Weber, Stephen Sondheim, and Harold Prince, including the Broadway Prince at Carnegie Hall, and seven annual The Night of 1,000 Voices concerts at London Royal Albert Hall.
She performed duets with tenor Jose Carreras at Radio City Music Hall and in 2002 starred in One Enchanted Evening in Belfast.
Mm-hmm.
She has sung with orchestras across the United States and can be heard on the recordings Unsung, Irving Berlin, and a gala concert for Hal Prince.
That's right. In Los Angeles, she played Clara in the L.A. concert premiere of Sondheim's Passion and was featured in Roger and Hart and Hammerstein for the Reprise Theater Company. She has guest starred on television and been a supporting player on film. She has sung several film scores, including Ice Age, Polar Express, and was a guest soloist on ABC's Dancing with the Stars.
She's here today, however, to talk about her current role as Abigail Adams in 1776, opening at the Eunice Soraya on February 8th. Please welcome the one and only Terry Bibb.
Come I get one of those? I'd that like to never hear that every morning when I wake up.
You did hear that for 1,000 performances of Phantom. How do you, I mean, that's amazing when you think about that.
It is. I still can't believe it sometimes. I did it for the better part of the 90s, on and off for about 8.5 years. I would leave it. I left it for a year a couple of times, but then they would call me back, and it was a really hard job to turn down.
Yeah, how do you
when
say
Hal
no
Prince
to that?
When Hal Prince calls you, say, okay, where do I go?
Well, you know, they Tim Gleason, who you worked with, Andrew, and you and I worked with, was Hal called him for the more recent version of it, and I think he went back to New York. I think Tim was sick, actually.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
And the audition didn't go as well, I think, or he didn't have it. I can't remember what exactly.
Wow. He was because of his illness, he was struggling a little vocally, right. So... Yeah, the audition didn't go as well as he had hoped for.
Yeah.
But Terry has said numerous times that The Phantom was sort of like Hotel California. You can check out anytime you want, but you can never leave.
Not that I really wanted to. I mean, it was a great gig.
How do you prepare for that, though? Physically, how do you prepare for something
like that? It's kind of all-encompassing. I mean, your whole day is sort of about that 8 p.m. downbeat. Mm-hmm. And especially when you're on the road, you're not at home.
Yeah.
You're in a strange city. Mm-hmm. You're probably in a hotel or some kind of corporate apartment situation where you don't have all the comforts that you are accustomed to having around you. So it really just becomes your focus.
Is it exercise? Or
yeah, sure. You know,
vocally
you find
and physically?
Both, yes. You have to keep your body in shape because your body is your instrument.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And you have to fit in your costumes.
Yeah.
And you have to kind of live like, as we say in our show, I sing to John Adams as Abigail. I sing, I live like a nun in a cloister. And you say you live like a monk in an abbey.
How funny. True.
Especially for Andy in this role of John Adams, it's just a beast. He just barely leaves the stage, whereas I kind of flit in and out in these little letters that we have to each other. But he carries the show, and he said, I really am living like a monk in an abbey.
I have been known to enjoy a good glass of tequila and during the show. No, that you just can't do it.
He just looks at it fondly on the shelf.
Oh,
as
that's
he walks
so sad.
By.
What's your favorite tequila?
Right now, I think Plaza Azul.
Wow, that's a great tequila.
It's a little expensive, but
he's a working actor. He can afford nice tequilas.
It's really not Jose
Cuervo for this man. I got to say, I've fallen in love with El Mayor recently, and also Casamigos, which is a fantastic George Clooney's.
George Clooney. Well, he sold it now.
He did. Although they still sell it at the bar down in Malibu. But it's funny because a good tequila, a little bit of tequila. I agree. That's a nice way
to
end.
Tell him about your tattoo.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I have. I got a tattoo that says.
See, this is the kind of insight a wife can give that other people we don't. Always get this on the show. This is what I'm talking about. I like this.
I mean, well, it's just a good representation for life in general. But the tattoo is "La vida es muy corta para desperdiciarla bebiendo tequila barato."
God bless you.
Which roughly translates to "Life is too short to waste it drinking cheap tequila."
Nice, nicely well done.
Sweet.
I think we got another field trip here for State of the Arts.
Yeah,
that sounds great. That's awesome.
Tattoos for everybody.
Yeah, that's right. You got to tell me a little bit about how the transition from a role like Christine, which is first of all, do you ever walk under chandeliers and just look up just to be sure? I would do that like permanently after 1,000 performances. I would just keep my eye on all chandeliers. Is it hard to transfer out of something like that is operatic and then go to something that's so traditional musical theater like you've done time and time again? Does Christine kind of spoil your view of other musical theater or does it enhance it?
I think variety is everything to a performer, and I always looked at Christine as a musical theater role. I never approached it as being more operatic. I mean, she has the one sort of aria near the beginning of the show, but it's truly a musical theater piece. It's perhaps more through sung than some shows out there.
Yeah, I can't talk sing my way through the role of Christine. They're just not going to happen. It's just not something that's in my wheelhouse.
Right. But I think it's fun to embrace different styles, and of course, the more varied you can be, the more work you get as an artist.
In those 1,000 performances, how many times did the Phantom change, or did he?
I had 12 different Phantoms
really?
Over the years.
Wow.
Such as?
Mark Jacoby, Davis Gaines, the late, great Kevin Gray.
Wow.
Rick Hilsebeck.
Davis is a good friend of the show.
I probably did it with Davis more times than any other, and he was my longtime Broadway guy.
Yeah.
I did it with him in New York.
Him.
Yeah.
Boy, I tell you, I saw him as Don Quixote when he was at venue you're going to at the Valley Performing Arts Center, and
blew it
out the water.
Yeah, it was great.
And it's funny because you know he can sing. That's a given. But his storytelling technique, I just thought it was so honed and so beautiful.
Did you do it with Frank D'Ambrosio?
I did not. I have sung with him in concerts around, but we never did the show together.
Because he, like Davis, holds a record, I think, for San Francisco of doing it the most time.
Yes.
Yeah. So, what did you have your favorite?
She can't.
Oh, they'll never tell.
Breaking news on stage. That means yes.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay. If we were hard-hitting news reporters, we'd push this point.
But wait a minute. We can narrow it down. Was it any of the ones you just mentioned?
How tall were they?
Oh, okay.
That's great.
We'll leave it at that.
That's great.
Gentlemen, you'll have to figure that out yourself.
And we have Davis on the phone here asking to know for sure.
By the way, Davis did, the last time I did 1776 in 2010, Davis was in that production at Music Theater West. He played Richard Henry Lee.
Oh,
and he was fantastic.
He was
it was great.
Well, what can't he do? I mean, he does it all, right?
Yeah. Wow.
Like you do.
Well, I'm not that much.
Well, stuff I've seen has been pretty darn good and versatile, so.
So now you are a performing family, which I love. I think that's amazing. We've had a couple groups of married couples who've been on the show who work together, which I think has to be wonderful, but also very, very hard at times, too, because if someone, you know, forgot to shut the garage door and the dog got out the night before, it's tough not to bring that on to stage. So have you worked together many times, or is this a first time?
No, just a handful.
How cool.
Yeah. And we've been together a long time.
and I don't think we've ever, this is only the second time we played opposite each other as love interest. We did in the production of The Student Prince, we did years ago.
Many years ago.
But the few times that we've worked together, it's just, you know, we've been in the same show, but we really didn't
play opposite each other.
Wow.
And so it's a real treat. But it does, as you say, have its own baggage that comes with it. Like when we started rehearsals, Andy had a terrible cold, and as we were saying, you know, you're at the mercy of your body, and so he and the role being such a beast, he was worried about his voice, he was very stressed, and I, as his spouse, was absorbing all of that anxiety.
Oh, that's
whereas
hard.
If he had
car,
just been my leading man, I'd be like, oh, stop whining,
right, and cough the other way,
right. But because he was my husband, I was like watching the monitors, going, does he sound scratchy? Does he sound okay?
That's
funny. You know, so it's more stressful.
Yeah.
Well, I had a chance to look up a couple clips, and I don't think there's any worry about either one of you not sounding good. Two amazing, amazing voices. How is it? Is it got to be difficult to keep your voice in such good shape when you're working year round? Do you have a specific routine before each show that you like to do that you can maybe pass along?
Like a ritual.
Right. Something that, you know, I know people that like to do a little bit of, you know, something acidic before they sing or other things like that. Do you have anything that you like to do?
No, not really. I just, you know, try to stay hydrated. Maybe some tea with honey. You just discovered this stuff that your acupuncturist
called
gave
tequila.
Tequila, yeah.
And his water bottle back.
Well, she doesn't go. She's a bourbon drinker. So
that's
what,
as a Kentucky boy, I fully approve. Oh, that's what I'm talking about. I knew I liked you from the very beginning.
I know a voice teacher and a performer, Michael Scott Harris, told me about this. I can't pronounce it. It's a Chinese herb. That you put in hot liquid tea, and I think it's really quite wonderful.
It sort of tastes like liquid Ricola, actually.
And it sort of opens you up, and I found it very, very helpful.
Something you can get over the counter at like a grocery store, or do you need to go to a specialty shop?
Yeah, you'd have to go to, I got it online, but you'd have to go, I don't think they'd sell
There's
it at Whole
Foods.
There's
a guy on a corner in a black trench coat.
And if you'd like to know his name and number, it's written on the side of his van, so Andy gets 10% of all purchases that come from this. That's fantastic. It's interesting. I'm always intrigued by that because there's been multiple days since we've been on the radio together with Michael here that I come in and I'm like, oh, I hope the voice holds up today. You know, that's just for an hour on the radio.
Yeah.
You think about, you know, what a stranding feeling it is. I know that Donny Osmond, when he was doing Joseph, struggled a lot with stage fright, and it's constricted his voice and all that. And
with
you realize
stage fright.
Yeah, he dealt with a lot of stage fright during that show. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Boy, oh boy, I represented the boy and when he was much younger, Donnie and Marie and the brothers, and we did a world tour, and you never would have thought that. He never had that kind of thing, but maybe because it was Broadway, it was
so you represented
else.
Three Josephs, didn't you?
Andy Gibb and I didn't, and Donnie, but I wasn't representing Donnie when he did Joseph.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We were outside of that doing a world tour.
Well, for our young performers who struggle with that, Donnie has talked so intelligently about his struggles with that and kind of what he dealt with to get through it. My Bob Torrey, our friend Bob Torrey, was there for some of that. And it's amazing to kind of see how even seasoned performers who have been performing all their lives, you know, all of a sudden deal with something and have to find a way to get through that. I think that's one of the great things about live performers.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we get off the subject of you were talking about what do you take to help your mm-hmm. voice. You know, my mentor in my lifetime was Rosemary Clooney, and she taught me everything I know about singing and also music in general, which is why I have my nightclub, because I said I promised her I'd keep her music alive and that of her contemporaries. Mm-hmm. And, of course, when she was recording, and Sinatra and Sammy Davis and all those people and women like Rosemary, the hits were coming off of Broadway. That's mm-hmm, what Broadway right. served as a vehicle to provide that kind of opportunity. And when I, you know, I grew up really in her house with her kids and eventually became her road manager. And when she had an off night vocally, she did the most unusual thing. I've never heard of this before. She would take a fingerful of Vicks vapor rub and let it sit on her tongue and warm it up and swallow it.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
That would get her through one entire show.
Wow.
I've never heard that before.
Yeah.
Now she only did it on those rare occasions that it was so bad that she couldn't, you know, she couldn't have gone on to sing, so she did electric to do that. And I thought, wow, I actually tried it myself.
Could you? Yeah, I couldn't even choke that down. I can sometimes not even handle the canister when my kids are sick, you know? Yeah, it's like, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, so God bless her for that.
No doubt, no doubt.
So, yeah.
Michael, I enjoyed so much talking a little bit about the political and the historical part of the show because of what we've seen with Hamilton, right? So 1776 was the first version of Hamilton, right? Now, that's kind of a joke, but it's also kind of true, because if you went in and pitched, hey, I'm going to do a musical about the presidents, about the founding, you know, you just kind of go, really? It doesn't feel great. But this show really did introduce people to the drama and to the passion that these people went through when they were starting the country. Two or three beautiful songs in there that the first time I heard them, I just fell in love with them, including The Young Soldier on the Battlefield, and these kind of, they're just amazing, amazing songs. But Hamilton took it to a whole new level. Are you getting feedback from your performances you've already done? You were at La Mirada for how long?
Three performances?
The rest of this week.
Okay, so through this week. Are you getting some feedback from people saying, hey, look, this is kind of another part of the story that I'm intrigued in because of Hamilton? Has it helped?
We've had a couple of talkbacks after shows, and people have brought that up, the similarities and how they think that 1776 opened on Broadway in 69.
Wow.
And they're sort of saying this was kind of like the first Hamilton.
Yeah.
We have had that. And actually, Lin-Manuel did an interview with William Daniels.
Cool.
And talking about the similarities, and it was really quite fascinating.
What network, do you recall?
I can't.
We saw it online.
I thought it was an article, but I think they did actually have a live interview somewhere. Mm-hmm.
If one of our listeners happens to find a link for that and wants to share it with us on our Instagram or Facebook page, I'd love that. It's such a cool thing because history is something that we have to learn from. And as we've talked about now in our current climate, if we're not learning from what we've done wrong, how are we ever going to get better? And I think 1776 is such a good example of that. These were not perfect people. These were people who went out and had strained marriages. They had difficult, you know, things they had to deal with in their personal lives, and still did something that to this day has changed the world in a way that people will never fully know the extent of it. Pretty amazing.
Yeah, and a lot of these men lost everything. We don't hear about that.
That's right.
You know, that we know that they signed the Declaration. You can see their signature on the document. But a lot of them lost their fortunes, their homes, family members.
Yeah.
A lot of them died in poverty. It was.
And likewise, the wives, you know, were suffering through terrible hardships.
Absolutely.
You know, essentially banished from their home country as they tried to fight for a new world. You're right. What an amazing thing. That must be strange to be immersed in that world and then step back out into our modern world all of a sudden.
Yes, indeed.
But a great history lesson for young people who should experience this.
No doubt.
Even if it's their first show in a theater.
That's right.
Well, that's the overwhelming comments that we're getting from the talkback is that they feel like everyone, especially young people, should see this production because it so brings these people to life.
Right.
I don't remember. Is there any material that would be objectionable to parents of any kids of any ages?
I don't think so.
No,
it's funny because, I mean, it really is a beautiful piece for kids to be introduced to musical theater, because the music and the story hold up, but the history is such an added benefit. The name of the show we're talking about is 1776, the musical, and it's obviously a well-known piece and has been around for, I think you said, since 1969.
Yeah.
And I was exposed to it at a very early age and then hadn't seen a production of it for a while. So this is a rare chance to get out and see a beautifully done piece here. The dates that are coming up next at the Soroya are Friday, February 8th, 8 p.m., Saturday, February 9th, 3 p.m. and 8 p.m., and then Sunday, February 10th at 3 p.m.
And the venue clearly is named for a wonderful family that gave a major, major gift to the venue. And in the tune of something like $40 million.
Oh, my God.
They asked me for it.
Have you ever played there?
No.
Oh, have you ever been?
Oh, my goodness. Oh,
never been.
My
God.
Walk
never
in
been
and just oh, say
We're
words on that stage. They go forever. It's amazing. It's one of the best acoustic spaces in Los Angeles.
If not,
it really is beautiful.
The very best.
Yes. And that's saying something. Yeah, that's
it
saying
is
something.
A grand hall. It is amazing.
And when you see a good-looking dude named Thor walking around there, that's the Thor Steingarber.
He's their artistic director.
Amazing artistic
director.
But he's also great just to kind of mess with a little bit because he always looks perfect. So if you just untuck his shirt or something for me, make the rest of us feel better. Somebody's got to do something. Right.
Well, what I started to say, because I do want it to pay respect to the people that gave that beautiful grant and allowed this to be elevated, Eunice and Soroya Nazarian Center for the Performing Arts, the Soroya. It's at 18111 Nordhoff Street in the city of Northridge. And it's on campus of the college there. And so if you've never been, you will be in for a treat, as we've said, about hearing the sound. You can get tickets as low as $44. You get those tickets by calling 818-677-3000 or online at the Soroya, soraya.org.
Good.
And you'll be in good business.
Obviously,
right?
Easiest, you know, there's a lot of good things to go out and do, but this is an easy venue to get to. It's on the campus, so parking is generally speaking very easy. It's a safe place to go to, so you can also go grab food nearby and all that. It's a fun place.
Yeah, and also if you want to see it in La Mirada, you have not too much time left there. But our friends Kathy Rigby and her husband Tom McCoy are producing that.
Speaking of great promoters of the arts and supporters of the art here in L.A.
And go to LaMiradaTheater.com, and you can, if you're in Orange County area, make it easy on yourself and see it before it leaves La Mirada.
No doubt about it.
Yep. So, we have someone else that we need to talk to here.
Shall we do a live arts calendar today, Michael?
What do you think?
Before we bring in this handsome guy, I like to make him wait for the handsome dudes at the end of the show.
Oh, I thought you were talking about me.
No, I was. You too.
Okay.
Get on your front row seat time. It is music history in the making. Bringing fierce guitar playing and swing gospel music, Sister Rosetta Tharpe was a legend in her time.
What did you say, Sister Rosetta what?
Tharpe, isn't it?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Rosetta Tharpe. It sounded like something else.
Did you think I said a bad word on the radio?
You're
trying to get me in trouble with this.
It wasn't a bad word. Go ahead.
Was a legend in her own time and a huge influence on Elvis Presley, Johnny Cash, Jimi Hendrix, and Ray Charles.
The Signet Theater's production of Marie and Rosetta Chronicles her Marie and Rosetta Chronicles her first rehearsal with a young protege, Marie Knight, as they prepared to embark on a tour that would establish them as one of the great duos in musical history.
This story of letting loose, finding your voice, and feeling your soul is a soaring musical theater experience, chock full of roof-raising performances. Don't miss the show that the Daily Beast calls wonderful, touching, and empowering.
Maria and Rosetta is on stage at the Signet. Is that correct?
Signet? I believe that is correct, yes.
Yeah. All right, Signet Theater through February 16th. For tickets or more information, visit signettheater.com or call 619-337-1525.
Wonderful, touching, and empowering. That is a review, my friends. One that nobody's, you know, I mean, nobody ever writes those words in such a nice staccato way. This music, I don't know if you've heard clips of it, but it's got such a beautiful feel. I mean, this is somebody who literally changed the face of music, and most people don't know her story. So if you get a chance, go online. You can check out.
And how is it you know her story?
Literally just through Elvis Presley memorabilia that I've seen. I'm a big fan of Elvis and of Johnny Cash
Me
and all
too,
the great musicians
but I didn't
of that
know
era.
I've never heard about her.
In fact, some of it came up when we did our Million Dollar Quartet group with Adriana and Cole and all those great people. Yeah, the wonderful people who are in that down at the 3D Theatricals. And it was amazing to see how many people laid the groundwork for some of these performers who they never saw the money. They never saw, you know, the fame. But boy, did they really did some amazing things. And she comes from a unique background. So fun person to learn about.
Yeah.
Our next guest is an American actor who spent the early part of his career in New York as a stage actor. On Broadway, he performed in City of Angels, Passion, and Company. Since moving to L.A., he had supporting roles in over a dozen films and guest starred in over 60 television shows.
He has had recurring roles on 10 different series, including Mad Men, Weeds, Boston Legal, The West Wing, Desperate Housewives, and ER. He is also one of only 5 actors to appear in 3 series created by Joss Whedon, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Angel, and Firefly. In 2011, he was named one of the 10 best actor cameos in the video game L.A. Noire.
Wow. In 2013, he received the L.A. Weekly Theater Award for Best Musical Ensemble as part of the cast of Silence, the musical. In 2014, he played Roy Disney in When You Wish, the story of Walt Disney, for which he was nominated for Best Feature Actor in a Musical Ovation Award. Thanks, Porky Pig. It's raining. It's raining. That happens.
But I started to say, but like his wife, today he is here to be telling us about his current role as John Adams in 1776 at the Soraya. Coming up, ladies and gentlemen, again, Andy Umberger.
That's right.
I hear that all the time.
Andy, what a cool thing. Obviously, you're a New York veteran. You were on stage there for a long time, and then you made the transition pretty much full-time to L.A., is that correct?
That's right, yeah.
What was that transition like? Was it challenging?
A little, not as difficult as I thought it would be. I had wanted to come to L.A. for a long time. I went to school and I got a BFA in theater, so theater was my background. But
naturally, you're making a ton of money right out of school.
Yes,
BA
absolutely.
In theater always does that.
Yeah. Financial security. Here we come. I had wanted to try film and television for a long time, and there wasn't that much production in New York at that time. And Terry was ready. She had, you know, she had been working. We had both been working for quite a while. She was doing more and more concert work, and she said, "Let's go. Let's get out to L.A." So we did, and we left everything in New York. Sublet our apartment, came out here, put a mattress on the floor in Studio City, and said, "We got to give it at least a year."
What year was that?
That was 97.
Wow.
And the first year went well, and 5 years later, I think we're here. And the rest is history.
That's great. I ran across a friend of mine who's a performer as well, Jimmy Ray Weeks, who originated the roles in Diviners and worked it all over in New York. But he'd done that same thing, transitioning back and forth. And it's interesting to see how you're kind of a California person or a New York person, but you can appreciate both. But where you live is very defined by what you tend to lean towards. And I found that I was a California person much more than East Coast person. Did you feel that way? Did you feel more at home in California?
Yeah, a little bit. I had friends in New York who said, "Oh, you're going to hate L.A. You're going to hate it." And you know, Terry grew up in Oklahoma. I grew up in Virginia. We were in the suburbs. And when we moved here, we were like, "What's to hate? What are you talking about?"
Yeah.
You know, it's having a yard, a house with a yard where you can let your pets out and just that lifestyle. It's what we grew up with. So while we lived very well in New York in an apartment building and not having a car, this was just more at home for us. Yeah.
Right.
When you were off subject here, but when you were doing Buffy the Vampire Slayer, did you work with Dean Butler? Wasn't he on that series?
I don't think so. I did. I played a character named DeHoffrin, who would do like one episode per year.
Right.
And it was full prosthetic makeup. When they first started it, it was 5 hours in the chair to get ready. And then like an hour and a half to get out.
He was a vengeance demon.
Yeah.
Aren't we all, really, when you think about it?
He has an action figure doll.
Yeah.
Hold on. Now, how did we not get some of these for the show? This we need to be posting pictures of these. We could have had a whole little stop action film going on here.
Yeah. So I may have, but I don't remember. It's been a while.
I asked. He may have guested on it at some point.
Yeah.
Is that possible?
Yeah.
You know who he is, right?
I do.
From Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah, of course, Alonzo. Of course, yes, yeah.
And then he did. Then he was Moondoggy in the second remake of Gidget, and he jumped around from one series to another.
When I the episodes that I did, I don't think that you know he was on at that time. Yeah.
Wow.
All right. Yeah. He's a good friend, and he is now a very successful producer. He has his own documentary film company, and also is a producer for NBC. Wow. For their golf coverage.
Oh, wow.
And he
wow.
has a talk, he produces a talk show with a very famous golfer. Yeah, and he travels all over the world on to these amazing golf courses.
Wow.
All over the world. Do you golf?
I don't. I don't golf. Yeah.
Well, neither do I. Yeah. Do you?
A little bit. Yeah, I don't golf with any. Right. I carry my putter around just to practice whenever I see a windmill. Go up to Solvang and cause some trouble. No, I love to golf. I'm a golf fan, but I wouldn't say I'm a particularly proficient at it. So my brother always puts me to shame. He's like, "How do you hold your hands? Do you interlock the fingers?" I'm like, "I just hit the ball as hard as I can. I kind of see what happens." So John Adams, an interesting character because his name was not George Washington and it was not Thomas Jefferson. And so he kind of got trapped in the middle of a whole bunch of other people with bigger personalities. What have you learned about him from doing 1776?
Well, he had a big personality. He was sort of a bull in a china shop, but he didn't want that recognition. He never, I mean, Terry and I have talked about this in David McCullough's book, which is a great, biography of Adams. He wasn't interested in that. He was sort of interested in doing the right thing.
Right.
And I've said this before, we have the Washington Monument, you have the Jefferson Memorial. We don't have anything really in D.C. recognizing Adams, but he really was sort of the driving force behind this.
He doesn't even have an action figure when you think about it.
I know. Terrible. Can you imagine?
You're right. There's not. And I mean, and I think at that point you became vice president if you were second in the voting.
Yeah.
So he kind of got thrown into vice presidency first and then became president. But that's a tough role to be in. And of course, father to president as well, right? John Quincy Adams was his. Wow. Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah,
amazing.
The first president to live in the White House. It wasn't completely constructed.
It was a mess. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he's amazing. Terry was talking about this story that he represented the British soldiers in the trial for the Boston Massacre.
He was a lawyer. That's right.
Right. Yeah, he was a very unpopular decision. Wow. It did not go over well, but he wasn't concerned about popularity. He was concerned about doing the right thing.
Yeah. Interesting. It sounds like you've gained some respect for him as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Amazing.
Yeah,
so your interpretation of him, was that aided by Glenn Cassell, who is a wonderful director, of course? Did you have any challenges with Glenn about it? Or did he say, why don't you do it this way? Or
I found...
He pretty much let you go.
And then he had specific direction that, I thought I agreed with totally. And then there are a few things where I said, what's happening for me here, what I think is going on is this, and he would have something that was opposed to that, and we would come together with a compromise. But no, I really enjoyed working with him. Yeah, I thought he had a great vision.
Not your first time, right?
Actually, it is. I did a reading with Glenn over 20 years ago in New York, and this is the first time that I've actually worked with him in a full-on production.
Yeah. Wow. Terry's
I've worked with him many times.
He's a lovely man.
Yes,
he really is.
Lovely man,
a very good
wonderful
director
and a good friend.
I just saw him recently. So I want to kind of come see this because I did the PR for this show several years ago at a smaller theater in the Round.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that must have been tough.
Yes, Glendale Center Theater. Of course, mm-hmm. Which is that lovely, intimate 400-seat house out there in Glendale.
Glenn directed this in the Round in Sacramento.
He did.
Yes.
Wow.
Jim Barber and I, who's also in the cast in La Mirada and at the Sorella, he and I were both in that production in Sacramento.
Oh, lovely. I have never been to the Sacramento Music Circus.
Oh, my God. Oh.
Yeah.
Great stuff.
I know.
Yeah, they do a great job up there. And their venues now, because they were outside for a while, right?
Yeah.
They were
in the tent. When I first worked there, it was the tent.
Yeah, and I went up there not knowing what to expect, but now it's so nice. My friends, all their horror stories from the years before didn't apply. I was like, this doesn't seem like that bad.
What is the seating capacity there?
Gosh.
It's fairly large.
Yeah.
It's
pretty big. I'm not sure the number.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a friend who played piano for them for one of their seasons, and I mean, it was amazing. They had really great facilities, and obviously, right in the middle of that kind of strange drive up the coast, mm-hmm. and you go, this is a beautiful oasis of musical theater. What a wonderful thing.
Good. So do you feel when you are coming off stage every night that you have nailed this at this point in La Mirada?
Yeah, there's always going to be a night or two where I'm like, I was kind of off. But the audience's reaction has been great. I mean, they just love the show, and I think that's because of the show. Mm-hmm. And I think the show has always been relevant, but in our current climate, I think it's even more relevant today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
If for no other reason than the discourse between mm-hmm. that continued despite political differences, the discourse that continued until literally the days of their death, where they're bickering back and forth, but in such a respectful way so many times. Now, sometimes not, too, but also that idea of we need to get to what's right. We need to push through until we find an answer, not just I need to win the rhetoric battle, which
right,
is interesting.
Right. Yeah, the perfect example of Dickinson and Adams, who were friends, who went to school together, practiced law together, and then when this split happened, Dickinson for remaining loyal to the crown and mm-hmm. Adams for independence, they became bitter, bitter rivals. But even at the end, in the show, you see the respect that they have for each other, and that's what we're kind of missing today.
Yeah. And didn't Adams die on Independence
Day? Yes, he did. And, yeah,
within hours of Jefferson.
That's right, Jefferson and, that's right.
Yeah, 50
right.
years. It was 1826.
The 50th anniversary.
Nice that they coordinated that.
Yeah.
That's giving it all for your country, man. That's
I think
amazing.
One thing that has struck us anew, I mean, we've always loved this show because this is your third time doing it and my second. And
not this role. I've done different roles mm-hmm. in the show.
But it's... Among the people in the industry, among actors and people that know theater, it is so beloved.
Yeah.
It is one, if not the best crafted books of a musical. Mm-hmm. There is a 40-something minute book scene with no music
wow.
in this play.
And that's by Peter Stone, correct?
Peter Stone. It's perfectly written,
yeah.
and the music perfectly suits. So if you have not seen the show, I highly recommend coming out to see it, either in La Mirada or in Northridge.
It certainly yeah. appeals to a musical theater fanatic. But also to acting fanatics. There's some great acting parts in this
oh, yeah.
as well.
Yeah.
And certainly, I think from a historical perspective, it's unique in that regard as well. The name of the show is 1776, The Musical. It's headed to two different venues. It's at the La Mirada Center for the Performing Arts right now and headed over to one of our favorite venues, the Sorolla, here in February 8th is when it opens there, 8 p.m., and then February 9th, 3 p.m. and 8 p.m., February 10th, 3 p.m.
Yes, just those four performances. So don't be a slacker. Get those tickets while you can, and they're very, very affordable. And you know, Andy, I just wanted to ask you before we kind of finished with your interview: do you have a preference in your work in the theater versus work in television or film? Do you like one medium better than another?
The theater has always been, you know, near and dear to my heart.
Right.
And there's something about the theater to have the audience there that's magical. I mean, I've done work on film that I've been really proud of and really, you know, enjoyed it and
right.
enjoyed the people I'm working with. But theater is always going to be, you know, it's always going to touch me the most.
Right.
But, yeah.
SAG Awards. Did you see them?
I did not.
Did
I
you see them?
Yes.
Excuse me. What happened with the opening of that show and Megan Mullally and...
No, not quite sure.
Yeah, I'm speechless. I can't even get out of my mouth. That was the worst thing I've ever seen.
Wow.
On an award show. The writing was horrible, and neither she or I'm sorry, who's the? It just went out of my the man, the other host.
It wasn't Sean Hayes, was it?
No. It was one of the. Oh, he's very famous. He has his own talk show. He's got three brothers. Silly.
I'm not even picturing him. I can only see her.
Yeah.
Oh, Alec Baldwin?
Alec Baldwin.
Uh-huh.
And you would think, because he has a sense of humor, and not even they, whether it was the writing that failed for them to be able to pull it off or not, but
yeah.
she was like, you know, she's a funny girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was not funny.
That's a tough job.
It's a tough gig.
I would not want to host an award show. There's not enough money in the world.
And they tried to make it very sexual. And
don't let your agent hear that you just said that, just so you know.
They were playing off their roles on Will and Grace, I think.
Yeah.
And
well,
they were counting on people to make that transition
yeah.
between Karen Walker and her love
right.
interest
that's
on Will and Grace and not
right.
Alec Baldwin and
yeah.
Megan.
Yeah.
So.
Well, as you know, Megan's a good friend, so I invited her in, Michael, so you could tell her face to face what you thought.
No, it's I'm a huge fan.
I know you are. But what's
and,
funny,
and
too, is that everybody's been talking about that on social media, about what happened. Like, was there a behind-the-scenes story? Did something go wrong? Was this like a cover?
Something went terribly wrong.
Something went terribly wrong.
Right.
Oh,
and
my.
Now, embarrassing moment.
Oh, dear.
We don't have any choice. It's been said. So now you have to give us an embarrassing moment. The purpose of this is to let our young performers know that sometimes something goes horribly wrong on in a set, at an audition, or on stage, and yet you get through it, and life does go on, just like the show must go on.
So, Terry, you're first up.
Okay. well, the one that pops to mind is I was doing She Loves Me on mm-hmm. Broadway. I was the standby for Amalia. So I went on 3 or 4 times, like the end of October and then the beginning of February. But then sometime in the early spring, I went on for a week. Mm-hmm. And it was my 7th performance. And there's a scene at the very end of the play where the leading man and the leading woman kiss. He drops a couple of packages. She drops her purse. It starts to snow. The walls of the perfumery close. Blackout. And you have to turn in the blackout, pick up the purse and the packages, and then feel your way across the front of the stage into the wings to start the curtain call.
Wow.
Right? So it was the 7th performance. Everything had been going fine. Saturday night, we kissed. It started to snow. We dropped our packages and my purse and the blackout and the walls closed. And I turned and I found the packages had tiny little pieces of glow tape on them.
Very smart.
So I turned and I found the first package and I was like, oh, where's the other package? And I turned and I started to walk towards what I thought was the second piece of glow tape and I walked off the front of the stage.
Oh, no. Was it an orchestra pit?
No orchestra pit.
Thank goodness.
I fell into the front row of the audience.
And that ticket was much more expensive than the other tickets, I'm sure.
I fell onto a woman who already had a broken arm.
Oh, my God.
And she started screaming, my arm, my arm.
No.
And I had the breath knocked out of me because I hit the armrest and broke a rib. And so I was going, and feeling my way across the front of the stage thinking, is someone going to come get me? Because
right.
the lights were coming up for the curtain call and I was still in the audience.
Oh, no.
And the woman's husband that I fell on, he followed me backstage and he's yelling at the stage manager, she fell on my wife.
Wow.
And I'm still going,
yeah.
Yeah, so that
So did you take your curtain call?
I did take my curtain call, and I actually did the matinee the next day with a broken rib.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
And
wow.
if you know Amalia, She Loves Me,
kidding.
She gets thrown over someone's shoulder.
Oh,
she falls onto
no.
a bed with her ice cream. It's a very physical role.
Did they modify that for you?
They did not.
Oh.
Amazing.
How kind of them.
Wow, what courage. That's amazing.
And now, embarrassing moments.
The wrong sound. You're supposed to get applause there. Oh. Andy, it sounds like it's time for your embarrassing moment.
Well, since we're on the subject of broken bones, this was years ago. The show I Love My Wife. There's a 4-piece band that they come on stage with. It's a 4-member cast, and they do the numbers, and they're in different costumes. There's one number; it's kind of a honky tonk number, and we have this huge upright piano.
Wow!
And the stage manager, the assistant stage manager, was out sick, and so I helped the director, who was the only person who knew the show, a woman. To move this piano onto the turntable, and it caught an edge and went over backstage. And I tried to grab
it's a full grand?
Yeah, upright.
Okay,
huge,
oh, I see. Okay.
Upright. As it went down, made this huge sound, pinned my ankle under it.
Oh, no.
And then I hear the director trying to be quiet, saying, someone help me, I've broken my leg. Someone help me, I've broken. And I'm like, shut up, I'm pinned under the damn piano. she broke her femur.
And she was able to stay calm and quiet.
Yeah, she was like,
in shock.
I'm not going
to
disturb the show. Who's
the director?
Yeah, her name is Nancy Cates.
Amazing.
Yeah, wonderful director. She's in Ohio now.
Shakespeare Festival.
Yeah,
I've been on the stage with actors who have broken bones before and couldn't do that, even if it was like a rib or a finger or whatever. Yeah. But I've been on football fields with football players who have shattered their femur, broken their femur, and sobbing. I mean, that's terribly painful. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Real credit to her. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, hey, we got to say a big thank you. What a fun show today. Wow.
Thank you for coming out in the ring.
Hey, there's the applause. Ed Hall finally was quiet and the audience decided to clap on that one. What a cool thing. This show is something we certainly recommend you get out to go see. Again, the name is 1776, and the easiest way to go get tickets is just to get on the Soroya's website, www.thesoroya, SORAYA.org, or you can call 818-677-3000.
Absolutely.
Michael, lots of fun to see you last night.
Thank you.
Hello, Dolly.
Yeah,
don't
it
forget
was
to,
fun.
People
it
need to go
great.
See the Pantages' beautiful production,
Hello,
Dolly.
We're going
to
have some of their stars on the show next week.
Is that a promise?
Yeah.
All right. Then where will I see you?
Right here on the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.